Welcome back to the Woodbury Report. This is Lon Woodbury, an independent educational consultant located in North Idaho. And today we're going to talk about public-private partnerships for at-risk education. And I'm going to talk to the author of a book by roughly the same name. I'm going to talk to one of the authors, Mark Claypool. He's the president and CEO of Education Services of America. Well, good afternoon, and incidentally, it's May 5th, 2015. And good afternoon. Good to have you here, Mark.
Well, thank you, Lon. I appreciate you taking the time to talk.
Well, why don't we start talk a little bit about Education Services of America. I was in contact with you a number of years ago, so bring me up to speed. Where is your focus now?
Well, you know, our company is focused on providing the best services we can for students who kind of fall into three categories. We do a lot of work with kids who are at risk of dropping out or who have already dropped out of school, and recovering those kids and getting them caught up and back on track to graduate with their cohort. We do a lot of work with older children with severe disabilities as well. We have some substantially separate schools, as well as what we call collaborative classrooms, which are classrooms on public school grounds where we go and we staff those classrooms, and we work with kids with autism and other developmental issues, kids that are really just not going to be mainstreamed.
Is it primarily kids that have learning differences, or is there a little bit more behavior or motivation? What's the mix of the kids that you wind up working with?
Well, that's a good question, Lon. We, you know, as a company, we work with about 14,000 kids a day, and if you kind of looked at that at a bell curve, on kind of one end of that would be kids that are just really, really complicated with multiple handicapping conditions, kids that are nonverbal, kids that can't toilet themselves. That's kind of the extreme, and that would be a fairly small group. The other end of the spectrum, again, would be a fairly small group of kids who are just kind of overage and under credit, who have motivational issues, attendance issues, a lot of family issues, and are not attending school. Most of our kids kind of fall in the middle of the bell curve. They're going to be 15 years old, really underachieving. Some have learning disabilities. Some have other developmental issues. Some just, again, lack some motivation. Mm-hmm. But it's really what we have found over the years is some of our kids come from public school districts, some come from just private placement, some come from healthcare placement. The kids kind of are remarkably similar, frankly. It's just a label that's given them by the funding source. And our programs are really designed to emphasize those strengths that the children have, to really help them develop those strengths and to show themselves to be you know, quite smart, as most of them are, quite bright, and to give them hope for dignity and independence, and then we feel like that if we've done that part, then kids can overcome an awful lot of other things that may seem intractable to the average person.
Okay, now these are day schools; they're not boarding schools. They're day schools that you work with.
That is correct. We do not have any residential programs.
Okay, the. You've had quite a bit of experience. You mentioned collaboration to where you're staffing the, that I imagine that's teaching staffing for public school classes. So you've had a lot of collaboration, and that's the topic of your book, is what you've learned in that. Is that correct?
That is correct. The title of the book is We're in This Together, Public-Private Partnerships and Special and At-Risk Education.
Okay, so what have you learned, and what isn't happening that should be happening for the kids that you're trying to correct?
Great question. You know, the purpose of the book is really to help convince people in public education, and I think people at state government, and maybe even the general public, that there should be more partnerships between the private sector and public education. There's this long-standing and deeply embedded idea in public education that if public schools don't do everything for themselves, they've failed. And this is much more of a barrier to our work than a teachers' union or any other kind of political problem. I mean, we work through those things all the time without really any major problem, but there's just this kind of cultural resistance to asking for help. And our position on this is that if we're going to be successful with the level of diversity that our public schools have and the incredible long list of things that are expected of a public school system these days. If they're going to be successful at all, they're going to have to embrace outside help. And the analogy that I often think of is if I went to my doctor, my general practitioner with an injured knee, and I said I really would like to see a specialist, and he got really offended and said, "No, I'm your doctor." You know, I probably wouldn't go back to that doctor. We expect in healthcare to receive a referral to a specialist, and that's really, in my opinion, the way that public education is going to have to evolve. It's going to have to evolve into become the generalist who is out looking for niche and specialized programs, and the best place to get those is in the private sector.
Oh, absolutely. I know that looking at public schools, and I used to be a public school teacher for a number of years, and they're supposed the whole mission seems to be set up, and their attitude is all things to all people. They provide school lunches. They sometimes provide breakfast. They mow the lawn. The staff mows the lawn, and yada, yada, yada. There has been some collaboration on lunches and some of those other material supporting things, though, hasn't there? And that's pretty well established.
That is. But I think the trouble starts to arise when you start talking about actual instruction of students. That's when it just really starts to create a lot of emotional response.
I can see that, and like in our local school, we had some kids in a K-8 school. I was very impressed by that model because I thought that was an anachronism, but it worked very well. But I was noticing they would have fundraisers, and my wife's an attorney, and myself a professional educator, and several other people that were very competent people that would have a lot to offer. They were serving pizzas in order to raise money to get a playground. And that's about the only way the parents could be involved. In another case, for example, in my background, I'd worked for the U.S. Senate for several years. I'd worked on a successful presidential campaign in Washington, D.C., and in research, and I've been involved in that whole thing. Do you think the local government teacher was interested in having me come in and talk to their class? They do it all themselves. They were just, I don't know, maybe they're afraid I would upset their curriculum or their syllabus or something of the sort. But that seems, I agree, that seems to be, and it seems to be pervasive in public school, and shorting the kids, because a lot of resources, we have a lot of people, we live in a logging area, there's a lot of biologists and people with college degrees, they could really help, they could really do good in the science classes, but again, that's the same thing you've ran into. Now, you're supposed to get on the soapbox, not me.
Well, it's an easy soapbox to get on. It doesn't make a lot of sense, really, and it's just not in anyone's best interest, especially the kids, which is really what it should all be about. All of these discussions, all the dialogue on what we should do with public education should begin and end with what's best for kids. Mm-hmm. And unfortunately, I don't mean to sound so cynical, but most of the dialogue is all around making the adults feel good about what's right, rather than just focusing on what's best for the kids.
Mm-hmm. Well, there's a lot of politics in it to it, because the way I look at it, and in my state of Idaho, I'm more familiar with, but it seems like there's all kinds of people that want to be the hero that solves the education problem. So everybody's fighting, trying to get their model. Do you have any observations of in addition to more collaboration, how the school might be, how the model of how we educate our children in schools could be changed or modified to improve it? Do you have any other suggestions that from your experience?
Well, you know, I got all kinds of ideas about that, and I'm sure everybody does. That's the one thing.
And probably some of them controversial, too.
Well, no doubt. But I think, you know, everybody's an expert in education because we all went to school, right?
Mm-hmm.
It's like parenting. You know, what I find interesting, Lon, and I think everybody that pays any attention to K-12 education knows that it always seems to operate on one end of the pendulum swing or the other, and it rarely just kind of settles into anything. And we have come off and are coming off probably the most intrusive period of time with regard to kind of federal involvement in public education, and I really see that pendulum getting ready to wind up and swing all the way back to state control with very limited federal involvement. And so it's going to be fascinating to watch, you know, with quote, Common Core, and how, you know, just how common that actually ends up being is very much in doubt right now. But as we strive for commonality, which I understand, I mean, I really understand we need to hold people accountable, we need to know that we're kids are learning, but at the same time, the idea that all kids need the same exact thing is folly. And in a nation as diverse as we are, the standards sometimes that are held up, like, you know, we should be more like Finland. Well, we're nothing like Finland. You know, when you can go to the Chicago public schools have nothing in common almost with the suburban public schools that are just 5 miles away from them. Mm-hmm. The kids are different. They have different needs. They come from wildly different backgrounds. And, you know, I think that instead of seeking a common solution for everything, we should be empowering local school districts to seek specialization. And that's really where I think the private sector can be of the greatest value. Not everybody needs the same thing. Not everybody comes to the table with the same background or the same skills or, frankly, even the same capabilities. And I just think we're going to have to recognize that and to be more relevant. And then some of that can be quite controversial. It gets caught up in all sorts of politics, and not the least of which is the politics of race. You know, are you denying a poor inner-city child, a minority child, an opportunity by trying to help them learn a vocation rather than insisting that everybody go to a four-year liberal arts college?
Oh, absolutely.
Well, we better do something.
Yeah, I've got to do something. And there's a lot. We could go on for a long time. This we about ran out of time. But I would think you are in the situation to where if somebody's interested in hearing more of what you say, you are interested in talking to any district or any person that has some in order to maybe do some sort of collaboration. You'll work any place in the country?
Absolutely. And we just love to be, even if nothing else, just to be a resource to help districts understand all the options that are before them.
Okay. Well, if a district is listening and is interested in finding out more, how would they get a hold of you to ask you questions or find out more about ESA?
Well, you know what? They can email me directly at mclaypool, that's mclaypool, at esa-education.com. Or they can call my office at 615-361-4000.
Okay, or the website, esa-education.com, the same as for your email. Well, thank you very much. I guess we're going to have to get you back and touch on some of these things that we just lightly glossed over this time. But thank you very much, Mark.
Thank you, Lon.
Well, this is Lon Woodbury with the Woodbury Report. And please contact Mark if you have any questions. He's open to everything.